pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And Mr. Chair, we have been appropriately noticed.
Thank you. All right, welcome, everybody. I believe we've got a swearing in, correct, before the recognitions?
I do solemnly swear
that I will support, protect, and defend the Constitution and government of the United States and the Constitution of the government of the state of Nevada against all enemies, whether domestic or foreign and that I will bear true faith, allegiance, and loyalty to the same any ordinance, resolution, or any law of any state notwithstanding and that I will well and faithfully perform all the duties of the office of an alternate of the Southern Nevada District Board of Health on which I am about to enter, so help me God.
That's a mouthful. If you can say that, you're qualified. All right, we're going to turn the time over to Dr. Iser for recognitions.
You okay? Good morning. As we go into this season of sharing and holiday merrymaking, it's only appropriate for us to begin to recognize the employees that we and the district have not quite been up to speed in doing over the last 4 or 5 years. Once I got here, we discussed how and when to do it, and it has come to be today for the beginning of this. So today we will honor the people who have been here for 25 years. In January, we'll have someone who will have been here for 30 years at that point. And then on December 10th, in which I'd like to again invite all of the members of the Board of Health and all the alternates to come to our holiday party. It'll be from 4:30 to 6:30, and then we'll be honoring the people who have been here 5, 10, 15 years and up to 20. So please do come to us on December 10th, 4:30 to 6:30, and we'll be hosting for you. We'll accept donations from any of those of you who come, but that's not necessary. So first, we want to recognize 7 special employees who have proudly served the Southern Nevada Health District for a quarter century. And they are, and if you'll please come up one at a time, and I'll hand you, hopefully the certificates are still in alphabetical order. I'll give you your certificate, and then we'll take pictures at the very end. Mike Bernstein. Let's see. Yeah. Lorraine Forston. You're very welcome. Thank you. Rose Henderson. Tom Kebke, who's dressed even nicer than I am.
Thank you.
Kim Ogren.
Thank you.
Who's also dressed even nicer than I am. Gloria Reda. Thank you. And finally, Ellen Spears. Is Ellen not here today? Okay. So for these folks who have been here a few years longer than I have and a few years longer than most of the leaders, in fact, maybe all of the leadership team, thank you. Certainly together you've been here longer than the nation has been alive. Thank you for your service. It's my personal pleasure to thank you for all of your contributions and dedications over the last 25 years. The district's success greatly attributed to the professionalism and commitment of team members such as you all. You are the helping hands, improving and protecting health in the greater Las Vegas area. Again, on behalf of the SNHD management and staff, and if I may say so, on behalf of the Board of Health, thank you for all that you've done for the district and the community. Thank you very much. And I guess line up in between the two of us,
if you would.
And we'll get some pictures.
I need to inform you, and I think we let you know last month or the month before, that this will be the last board meeting for Mars Patricio. He is planning on retiring and will be gone by the time of our next board meeting in January. Mars, would you come up? Mars joined the district in 2009 as financial services manager and will be retiring on January 2nd. He'll be serving in the capacity of financial advisor until his retirement. I want to thank Mars for his commitment and hard work over the last 5 years. And believe me, I wish you well in the future and hope you enjoy retirement. And I hope I'm not too many decades behind you. Seated. This isn't quite a recognition, but an introduction. So with Mars' retirement, it's my pleasure to introduce Sharon McCoy Huber as our new financial services officer. She assumed responsibilities as of Monday, November 17th, which is just a week ago if I've added my days correctly. And would you come up?
Sure.
And then tell us a little bit about yourself.
The one thing I can teach you is that Leo knows everything. So cool. Trust in Leo.
Cool. Hi, it's nice to meet you all, and this is the first board meeting that I'm attending. I look forward to working with all of you. I bring with me over 30 years of governmental financial accounting background, and I'm excited. I've worked for a water district before, I've worked for cities before, I've worked for counties before, and I've worked for school districts before. So I have a vast experience in governmental accounting for all different realms. My challenge with the health district will be the clinical area, and they've already been working with me. Last week I spent 4 hours in the area, so I'm excited and I'm really glad to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, Sharon, and thank you to Mars and for all and to all those quarter century employees. That's a great honor, and I hope to be able to say that one day that I've served for 25 years doing something. All right, we'll start with item number one on the agenda, which is our public comment that's devoted to items on the agenda. Is there anyone wishing to speak today in that public comment period? All right, don't see anybody, so we'll move to number two, adoption of today's agenda.
And with your permission, we talked to Tim over the last week, and he asked us to pull item five, Roman numeral five, number one, which is the district's longevity plan, until he could be here next in January.
Okay, do we have any other changes? All right, we've got a motion to approve with changes.
Second.
And a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That carries. We'll move on to the item number three, consent agenda. Any discussion or changes on that? Got a motion and a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion also carries. Moving quickly today, we have no items on the public hearing action item number four, correct? So we will move to number five, and number one's been removed, so we're on Roman numeral five, number two, petition 27-14, approval to reduce the board approved unrestricted fund level in the general fund from 16.6% through the range of 16.6 to 25% down to 10%.
And there's a second part to that.
Yeah, that's an important
and
part.
Create.
And approve resolution 01-14 establishing an emergency fund for the health district.
And if I may, we have discussed this before, and in talking to the finance committee, one of the things that we discussed is that if we established an emergency fund from which we can draw on issues like Ebola, on issues like TB, that we might be, in conjunction with that, we can decrease the board requirement for an in-fund balance of 16.6 to 25 down to 10. I'm not wedded to 10, so if you think 12% is better, 13% is better, that's fine with me. It was just a petition to get the conversation going and to see if you all would be willing to do this.
Question?
Yes.
Thank you. What would the dollar amount equate to then?
Gosh, Andy, do you
have the answer?
Ah.
Sharon, welcome aboard.
Okay. My name is Sharon McCoy Huber. I'm the financial services manager. The current budget for 2014-15 is $61,973,651. So 10% of that would be $6,197,365.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And 10% seems to be the average actually within most of the local governments, so you don't want to go too much below that. The law allows for it in some certain circumstances, but I think that gives you the buffer. So we're really just segregating based on our conversation for emergency needs versus the standard. I think at least we try out that part of it, see how it works for the next period of time. So I would make a motion if there's no other questions to a move. To approve both items.
And I will explain the second item so that instead of putting a percentage in each year, what we recommend is putting in $1 million at the beginning of each year, spending it down, might be $900,000 one year, might be $200,000, spending it down to $200,000, and that at the beginning of the next fiscal year, bumping it back up to $1 million.
Okay, because you don't want to create people don't pay fees. You don't want an excess fund, and you don't want it just sitting there to build a reserve either.
Right. So that's
correct. And we believe I should know this for a fact, but it's about $750,000 that we spent last year on tuberculosis. It won't be that great this year for Ebola, but you don't know what the rest of this fiscal year will look like, nor do you know what next year fiscal year would look like. So, again, at the end of each year, we would fill that back up out of the general fund to $1 million.
That would be my motion.
I second it.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Just a question.
Bill first, and then.
What was, when you took this to the audit committee, was there any conversation regarding the pros and cons or?
Well, what there were basically was the con is that the 16.6 to 25% really gives us a huge buffer in case of unexpected drawdowns or unexpected expenses, but we can always use the general fund for that even if we were to use up the $1 million in the emergency services fund. So we still would have what remains in there if we needed it. I don't think that we perceive needing this in the near future. I think with an average, I don't know what that means, but an average earthquake, an average flood, an average natural disaster, I think it's when we get into things like tuberculosis, and let me explain one of those. It's the avian influenza H5N1 that actually might get us up to $1 million, but we don't see the need for that in any future years that I can perceive. So that's the biggest con against doing this, is that we would lose some of that buffer. But by putting in the $1 million, that adds some of that buffer back in that we otherwise would have.
Marietta.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to throw in the comment that I just returned from the AMA meeting in Dallas, and as you can imagine, a big topic of discussion was emergency preparedness, and we learned how nationwide, you know, once again we heard that, you know, the surge capacity and the preparedness is really not what it should be. So whatever we can do in that direction, it's very important.
And if I may, I comment, and that's where I would say that we need to work with our legislature and our national representatives to look at that. We do see FEP funds. We see CRI Cities Readiness Initiative. We're the only city in Nevada that gets that, and our HPP funds going down little by little, year by year, and being stretched further and further. So looking at the equity of how those funds are shared within the state, and looking to our national representatives to start to boost that back up, is where we need to be.
Susan.
I'll just make a general comment, and that's that we've had this 16% for forever. But part of it was to handle the kind of thing that we're now setting aside this money for, and this just makes total sense to in today's world, to be more transparent to our community out there. And let them know that that's what the money is for, and not just this pot of 16% that just is used for all kinds of different things. You know, it's just dividing it up and making sure that it's that we've got all our functional needs taken care of, but that it's we've still got a little bit of emergency fund over here too. So that's I'm totally in support of this.
And for us, it adds to the transparency, too, so that it's going to be – right now we're charging all of our time for Ebola to a 913 fund slash or hyphen Ebola. And having it come out of this fund will be an easy way to be able to show you what we've spent on certain outbreaks or certain incidences that we need to. I think it does increase transparency.
Yeah, for a variety of reasons, this is a really good move.
I agree with all of the comments, and thank you for those. I also think that 10% is as low as we would want to go. I agree with Chris on that. I don't, you know, my jurisdiction, we do 20%, and that may be high compared to other just jurisdictions, but just to let you know, it's some jurisdictions are a little higher. And so I do think I feel a lot more comfortable with this emergency fund in there, and I do think it adds a level of transparency for us. Any other discussion?
That would be my motion, Mr. Chair, for both to approve the resolution as well as the segregation of the fund.
I believe we do have a motion and a second already. So all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Good. We will move to Roman numeral 5, number 3, review, discuss environmental health, new grade card format, and critical control point policy.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Rosatar, Director of Environmental Health. This is a time for us to kind of shine and show you some of the impacts that we're having within industry. And I don't want to steal the thunder from Christine Silvis because they've worked so hard on making this change. I'll let her explain our new grade card and our new HACCP policy.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question? Is there a backup to read as a document on the HAPA? Has a possible?
No, there's not.
Okay, could we get something though for in the future?
Because
I'd like
sure.
to be able. Thank you.
So we had a meeting with industry a few weeks ago. My name is Christine Silvis. I am the Environmental Health Supervisor over Training and Compliance. And at that industry meeting, we presented on a few topics. One of them is the grade card. And if you all know our current grade card, it's the blue letter A. The B's are green, the C's are orange, and it basically says that we're the Southern Nevada Health District, and this is a grade, whatever the letter is, facility. So this is a grade A facility. So one of the things that we changed on the new grade card was to put on the top of it that on this specific date, this specific establishment was inspected and they received the following grade. And that was a response to consumers. The majority of these changes that were done to the grade card were for consumers, not for the industry, the restaurant industry. So it's to inform industry that on this day, the inspection was done and they received this grade. And that was in response to some calls that we would get sometimes as far as, I went into this restaurant, there's an A on the wall, but yeah, it is not an A grade today. So it's specifically on this date, that's when we were here. Also, one of the big improvements that we made to it is we added two QR codes. So if you have a cell phone, the QR reader, you can take a picture of the code. And this one over here will take you to the SNHD website, to the FERL, the Food Establishment Resource Library that we're so proud of. And it will explain the inspection process. It'll have the letter grades, how many demerits it is, how we do risk-based inspections. You can get a copy of the inspection report and has a lot of information with several links. On this side, this QR code will take you to the inspection query page where you can look up an establishment and see what their inspection history has been, what violations they got on their last inspection. So if you go up and there's a B on the wall, you can see what demerits they got and what violations they had. So you can get a little bit more information. It's not specific to the restaurant. It's going to take you to the query page and you have to put in the name and the address, as much information as you have, and then you can pull up their history. Another thing that we added for consumers, because they don't really know what the A means sometimes, especially if they're from out of state, we did add the grade system, explaining that 0 to 10 is an A, 11 to 20 is a B, 21 to 40 is a C, 41 and above is a closure. So the grades are the exact same size, the exact same colors as the current grade cards. A lot of facilities do have custom frames and matting to put these because they're actually not a standard size. So we wanted everything to stay the same. This is an example of the B card. I didn't bring a current B card. And then this is an example of the C card. So they still look very similar. We kind of just took the information that was on the bottom right-hand corner and moved it to the top and explained that it was specific to this date and then added the additional information to it. Industry seemed to like the new grade card. There's no regulation change in this, so we don't need to update the regulations. It's just a redesign. Are there any questions on the grade cards?
Susan. I'm just so impressed that we've got the QR our little labels there. That is
we're really
cool
excited thing about that, too. Yeah. Thank you. Getting there with technology. I'll hold the A up because it's a better one. That's what we want to see. So on to the HACCP program. That stands for Hazard Analysis Critical Control Points. It's a process that is used when certain facilities do a high-risk process in order to produce their food. The number of facilities that use HACCP is very small, but it's very important to the facilities that do use it. So it's a common-sense approach that's scientifically based to address the hazards in their food process and then to act preemptively and control those hazards so that they're producing a safe product. Because the plans are scientific and very technical, there's a lot of documentation that's required. They have to submit a hazard analysis worksheet, their HACCP worksheet, and all their documents for their standard operating procedures and their logs. And it gets to be very tedious, and there's a lot of mistakes that are submitted when they are submitted. So what we did is we came up with a new process for evaluating those plans, where we're going to have meetings. You can't submit a plan without having a meeting. And we'll do a preliminary review of the HACCP plan when it's submitted, issue any corrections that we find during that time. And then we work with the operator back and forth. We're going to try to have more meetings rather than doing it by email, because it's very hard to say on the plan and on these other worksheets that they don't match without sitting down and showing them. So we're going to try to have more meetings in the plan, in the process, to make the process go a lot smoother. In addition, we are in the process of updating our website. It's going to be a new page on the environmental health page. It won't be tied to the Food Establishment Resource Library anymore. And we have come up with many, many documents to support the HACCP plans. So we've come up with sample hazard analysis worksheets, sample HACCP plans. In addition to the sample passive worksheet, you also have like a fill-in-the-blank, so they can just use these sample and fill in the blank that'll help it go along. We've changed our SOPs, so they're also kind of fill-in-the-blank, so each section will say remove what doesn't apply, change it so that it meets your plan, et cetera. So we've come up with a lot of documents that will help them through their process, and those documents will be provided at a meeting. In addition, if somebody is looking to submit a plan, then we are having a preliminary meeting that's free of charge, so they can come in, explain to us what the process is that they want to do, and we can see if that meets the regulations, or if they're going to have to tweak their process in order to meet the regulations, or if they'll have to go to a processing authority if they want to continue with the way that they're planning on doing their plan. So that's an overview, and I do have documentations that we shared with industry at the industry meeting that we'll be happy to share with you.
If you'll send it to Jackie, Jackie will send it out.
Okay. We've got a comment or
just
a question.
Just a question. About how many certificates have been issued in this county or are currently active?
For ballpark. HACCP plans?
Yeah.
I'd have to look at that. It's over 100.
Mm-hmm. So it's in the hundreds as opposed to the small, the low thousands.
Yeah, and considering that there's, you know, about 18,000 food establishment, that's a small percentage of facilities.
And I think Mr. Noonan has been at some of these meetings, and where we have seen valid criticism about how long it takes us to go through a HACCP plan and to get it back out to industry, this is an attempt to make it shorter yet as effective as what it was before. And I think at the one meeting I went to about 3 months ago, Bill, you might have been there, that was a big bone of contention. We have a very, very creative culinary arts number of chefs here in the Valley. We don't want to stifle creativity, but we do want to make sure that by HACCP standards that it's safe. And again, this is an attempt to do both of those, be more industry friendly, yet protect the public's health.
Question.
Chris.
Thank you. On those lines, I vaguely remember when the when we were updating the food, and it was when cryovacking was first introduced. I think that kind of triggered some of the HACCP pieces, right? What are the other types of innovations? The way you treat cheeses, I'm going to guess. It'd probably be good for us because most of us weren't around when we had that discussion. So the backup documentation would be very helpful. But of the 100, say, what types of things trigger a HACCP?
The majority of them are what we call a cook-chill system. So that's if you want to produce food in bulk. You cook the food, you put it in bags while it's hot, and then you cool it in the bags, and you keep it at a lower temperature than normal. So you'd keep it at usually 34 degrees for up to 30 days. So you have a longer shelf life, and you get a more stable product. It's very consistent versus making small batches all the time. So that's considered a reduced oxygen packaging. It's very similar to sous vide, which is another process that we get. Most people think of the French, it's kind of the low and slow cooking method, although they have to do it a little faster commercially. So in that case, you put the food in the bag first, and then you cook it in a water bath, and then store it afterwards. And then vacuum sealing, like you said, we call that a two-barrier plan. So whether it's fresh meat or cheeses, those are the three plants that we get the most of. What Dr. Eiser was saying that about our creative chefs that we have in town, charcuterie, if you've heard that term, it's kind of a hot topic right now. It's like cured meat, so it's salami-type meats. So curing is a hazardous process because of the use of the curing salts that they use, the sodium nitrites and sodium nitrates. You have to make sure that you're definitely not getting too much of those in the products. So curing is something that we're seeing a lot of. And like the drying out of meat for beef jerky is with that.
Okay, that's a good example. Maybe the backup stuff has that information. I just want to make sure that when we talk about industry, with no disrespect, it's the larger groups that generally participate in the industry. And we really should have a conversation about how to do outreach to the smaller groups. They're probably not using the cooking methodologies that trigger a HACCP, but just overall. So that many of the small mom and pops don't get themselves into trouble down the road. And I know that that's something that's been talked about by the board. So I hope that we have some discussions further on how to engage them better.
That was brought up at the industry meeting as well. So the Restaurant Association really is trying to reach out to their smaller businesses to participate in those meetings, and it is a goal of ours for this next year to involve the smaller facilities more.
Good, because dues are dues, and small moms and pops are on the edge, and so joining an industry isn't necessarily what they're looking for. They're looking more for information. Make sure that you can't marry ketchup bottles, and you can't, you know, things that we used to be able to do in the old days. just trying to be sensitive so that we are preventing, which is, I know, the messaging coming in from EH now, which is a good way to do it. That would be helpful. And then if you give us backup information, if there's anything on the longevity plan, Mr. Chair, I would like to read it ahead of time so that at least we have the information for the discussion. That would be very helpful. Thank you.
That would have been added to this agenda, but Tim told us, asked us to postpone it, so we took all that material out.
Okay.
But it'll be
just send it out ahead of time when you do the agenda.
We will absolutely do that. And then Shirley Oakley has
Annie Oakey
has a presentation for you that she would have given today.
Thank you.
And Jackie Rezitor, Director of Environmental Health. I just want to brag about what a wonderful staff I have. These guys are on it all the time. They're ready to push and make change, and I'm so proud of all of them. So thanks, Christine. Mention the grants, absolutely.
And something that's not on your agenda item but is a relevant environmental health topic, we were notified last week that we received two AFTO FDA grants that we applied for. One of them is considered a small project grant. It's $2,500, and that is to complete our self-assessment of the FDA program standards. And the second grant that we received is a training grant for $2,000, where we can send one staff member. It's going to be Nikki Burns-Savage, our senior for the training compliance office. She's going to be able to attend a better process control school, which is very relevant to HACCP, so it goes over curing and pickling and things like that, and that's going to be at UC Davis that she's going to go to. So we're very excited about receiving those grants. Thank you.
All right, one more time. Jackie Rezitor, Director of Environmental Health.
This is, Roman numeral 5, sub 4.
Oh. All right, thank you.
Okay. Just want to introduce Jennifer Carr. She's from the Nevada Department of Environmental Protection, and she's going to discuss regulation amending NAC 278 for subdivisions.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Jennifer Carr. I am the chief for the Bureau of Safe Drinking Water for the Division of Environmental Protection, and I was asked to come join you this morning just to give you a rundown of one of the regulations we're proposing to amend at the State Environmental Commission hearing next week on December 3rd. I believe it was passed out to you, and I will give you a little bit of the background on why we're doing what we're doing, as well as run through the salient points of the sections of that regulation. So just as a little bit of background, the Division of Environmental Protection's Bureau of Safe Drinking Water regulates public water systems throughout the state as they're defined by state and federal law. And we also contract with the Southern Nevada Health District staff to help implement that program. We work with both their engineering division as well as the environmental health folks for inspecting water systems. And I'm happy to say that we have an excellent rapport and a great partnership with the Southern Nevada Health District. And so it's real comfortable to be here today. So. The subdivision review process, as I mentioned, is also an area that we work on with the engineers down here in the Health Division program. And it's done under state authority and exercised by the Health Division as required by Nevada Revised Statute in 278. So if there's any feedback that I receive today, I will certainly try to roll that into my preparation for the Environmental Commission hearing next Wednesday. But if there's any additional thoughts that come up, I'm happy to hear from anyone between now and, say, like Monday. If I hear from anyone by Monday, I think I can roll it into my testimony. What I will do is just, like I said, give you the Cliff Notes version of what we're doing, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have if there's anything I might have missed. But what we're doing, essentially, the overarching goal of these amendments is to change the process and timing of document review for subdivisions. to provide an earlier opportunity for subdividers or developers to legally do initial grading of the land before a final subdivision map is approved. So this alternate timing will allow options for subdividers that want to get a little bit earlier start on the earth moving part of their project. We're not proposing to change any overall fees. This is an option that we're providing should folks want to take advantage of it. So start by just briefly going over the definition of improvements, which are related to both the street work of a subdivision as well as the utilities that are going to be installed on land for sewer and water. And so if you look at Section 3 of the draft regulation, it's really the crux of what we're doing. It's on the text of it's on the top of page 2. So the current regulation says that the developer shall not perform any construction on the site of a subdivision except that necessary to evaluate the subdivision until the division or the local agency approves the final map. So this became an area of concern and was brought to the attention of the Washoe County Health District by the Builders Association of Northern Nevada. Because in 2008, the division, my office and myself actually, issued a letter covering what any construction might mean. And we interpreted any construction to mean, to include the grading of land. The folks that have projects in certain areas of the state are caught for some folks, they're caught in a bit of a catch-22 because in at least in areas where there's the 100-year floodplain, the FEMA won't sign off on a final map until the land has been regraded in order to show that the subdivision is out of the 100-year floodplain. But if they can't grade the land until they have their final map approved, then that they run into this circular problem where FEMA won't sign off on the map till it's regraded, but they can't grade until they get final map approval. So this amendment is working to address that so that we have folks that can legally regrade the land without running afoul of the subdivision laws and regulations. Another area that started this process, area of concern, was that in Washoe County, the developers are engaged with the Truckee Meadows Water Authority very early in the process of design of their infrastructure for water facilities. And Washoe County Health wasn't seeing the subdivision improvement plans, the design for water and sewer infrastructure, until much later in the process, much closer to the final map. Typically, the improvement plans, the engineering designs for the infrastructure, the utilities, and the final map are coming in together, which has created a timing issue for folks that have engineering designs that maybe can't be approved on the first go-round and have to do resubmittals. And so the developers were running into timing problems with getting through the engineering review process and getting through the final map approval process in a timely manner. So what the Builders Association of Northern Nevada approached Washoe County with was an alternate process to be able to divorce what we now will be calling the improvement plans, the engineering designs of the infrastructure, divorce those from the final map process. And the Builders Association asked Washoe County if they could just try this out and do a pilot project. And when we were approached with that idea, we looked through the regulations and we realized that it couldn't be done legally without a regulation amendment. So this is the reason why we're doing proposing a reg amendment at this time. So the what will happen in subsection 2, essentially, is that improvement plans can be divorced from the final map. As I said, they typically come in together. So they improvement plans, assuming this is approved as proposed, would be able to come in at any time after or around even the tentative map phase so that the engineers can all get busy both designing and reviewing and approving the civil infrastructure before it gets too far down the road. This does not propose to change any other processes in regard to building permits or any other environmental permits, dust control permits. It doesn't affect anything along those lines. It's just the process for reviewing and approving the engineering for subdivisions. So as you have in front of you, the amended regulation proposes that the developer shall not perform any clearing, grubbing, or grading on the site of a subdivision until the division or the local agency, in this case the Southern Nevada Health District, approves the improvement plans. And the developer demonstrates that the requirements of another associated set of regulations have been met. The other associated set of regulations have to do with the standards and requirements for ensuring that you have adequate supply of water and you have adequate means for handling wastewater. And so that all rolls into the engineering design process. And then the final section of that proposed regulation says that the developer shall not perform any construction of improvements on the site of a subdivision until the final map is approved. So that still requires that final map approval occur before they actually put any pipe in the ground. And so that continues through the process of buttoning everything up throughout all the agencies that have to be involved in sign off on a final map before they actually lay any pipe. And that is actually consistent with another section of regulations that says that the developer can't begin construction of improvements until they have their final map. So there's some consistency amongst the between the proposal that we have in front of you as well as the existing regulations. There are five sections to the regulations, clearly. The majority of them I'm happy to cover if anyone has any questions regarding them. But the other one that I would just mention in regard to sort of a summary of what we're doing is in Section 1, which talks about when a developer submits a final map for his of a subdivision for review, they have to show their complete plans for water and sewage disposal. And the part in blue that I'm proposing to add is that will help improve the process of design, review, and approval by the agencies. Because one thing that was expressed to me by our own folks internally, as well as our partners in both health districts, is that we didn't want to create a tracking nightmare where we had engineering designs separate from final maps, and how are we going to make sure they all match up, and what happens if they change something along the way. So this is intended to assist the reviewing agencies, as well as speed up the process for the development community as well, by saying that any if improvement plans were approved prior to the final map submittal, then the developer just needs to certify that the improvement plans were not altered subsequent to the agency's approval. And if any changes were made to those approved plans, they basically need to resubmit and clearly show on the plans what changed, which in engineering convention often involves putting like a bubble or a cloud around what had changed. So it's real easy to have our engineers, the district's engineers, be able to look very quickly through those plans and make sure that the changes are in line with regulation. I guess overall, I would let you know that this isn't a mandatory change. If folks still want to do business the way they've always done business, they certainly can. These improvement plans can still come in with the final map for a subdivision. But in the areas where folks want to be able to legally grade earlier in the process, they can take advantage of this improvement plan submittal in order to facilitate building and growth. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone has. Yes.
Chris.
Thanks. First of all, how many lots trigger a subdivision? Is there a number?
I think it's five.
Yes. Five lots, okay. And the adequate supply of water on site, where do you come in or where does the health district? I just had a neighborhood meeting, that's the only reason. Some people started doing, the project went under, but they started grading. They have no water on site. There were supposed to be cisterns up ahead. They gouged out at an arroyo, which is now causing drainage and flooding issues. So I'm just curious where I wonder if they even had a permit to do some of the grading that they did early on. I'm going to look into that as soon as I get out of here. But so I understand what you're doing, because that is a vicious cycle that they can get into. And more of your subdivisions are generally larger. But I just want to know, for my purposes, how do you prove out that they've got water, adequate water on site? Do they have to give you some documentation?
And Jennifer Carr, for the record, if I may just ask a clarifying question. Do you mean adequate water for water supply for potable drinking water, or for...
They have nothing up there. Supposedly, they worked out something with Senwa to put some cisterns, but they weren't up there, and they allowed some grading to occur beforehand. And I'm just trying to track back.
Is that for dust control or drinking?
No, it's for drinking water.
For drinking water, yeah. So if the community were going to be a public water system, it would come under regulation of our agency. If it's going to be supplied by the Southern Nevada Water Authority, through the subdivision review and approval process, one portion of that is to obtain what's called a will serve, so that SNWA can positively document the fact that they will serve that community with water. If they're not going to be served by an existing public water system, then there are provisions within the subdivision process for them to document that they have appropriate water supply, appropriate quality of water, appropriate water rights, all associated with that subdivision. As I had made the determination in 2008, all of that associated with approval of the final map mm-hmm. is supposed to occur before grading.
Before grading. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that they didn't. Yeah. So that's, okay.
And that is one of the things that we're working to avoid, because we are aware that there are folks developing land and starting to grade before they get their final map.
Correct.
And it can create other problems other than just the FEMA issue that I mentioned. We have experience in other areas of the state throughout time where they've graded prior to final map approval, and then if we find a problem with their engineering design, and if they can't get their sewer to flow properly, and then they want to put their sewer over the water, which is not what we want to see, that we run into issues with the design. So we want to make sure that the design is done in a complete and sanitary manner before they start to grade, to try to avoid those sorts of issues.
Okay, thank you. I'll do my digging further, but thanks for the presentation.
I just have a question. If approved, when would this option become available?
This is actually a temporary regulation, because it was proposed after July 1 of this year. And as you know, the legislature's ramping up for start of their work in February. So this will become effective upon Environmental Commission approval, but it will be under temporary status. So we will be doing this again about a year from now as a permanent regulation, once we get it through the Legislative Council Bureau and they work their magic on my language, and then we will workshop it again and go through this process with the Environmental Commission again next year. So it actually provides I think a nice time frame to try it and make sure it's working, and then do any final tweaks before the reg becomes
so currently
permanent.
Though they still need to have final approval. We're stuck in the loop, so to speak.
The way it is currently written, yes. Grading is not, and
right.
as I have interpreted the regulation, grading's not to occur until final map approval. So I understand that there are different interpretations of that, but we're working to rectify that through this as well, so that folks don't feel hamstrung by the process.
Just one question. What additional public notification is there about this change that'll take place?
I did a public workshop last Tuesday, the 18th, and it was in Carson City, and it was video conferenced here to Las Vegas. And then the State Environmental Commission hearing is an open public forum next Wednesday as well.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Jennifer. We appreciate it. Do we need to take action on this?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, we will move on to Roman numeral number 6, board reports. Do we have anyone from the board wishing to report on anything?
I just have a question. I mentioned to Andy, you all may have read in the press this last week, that the PERS board is recommending some increase in the PERS funding, knowing that it has not been accepted. I asked Andy if he could provide us, just from a budgetary standpoint, what that additional fiscal impact could be to the board and to the budget.
Question.
Okay, thank you. Chris?
Thank you. The press came, and I think they talked to Jackie as well about the Darcy sometimes spreads things around, but about the health card or the health certificates. And that's allegedly in one business, somebody found that a family member had taken the tests for the individuals online. And they're querying whether or not it's still appropriate. And I said yes, but maybe we have to look at some checks and balances on the testing component. They haven't aired it yet, but it's coming up. So I just wanted to, was it aired? Okay, I've totally been out of it. I still think it works as a process. I think it's been very, very good for folks, but we just might want to make sure that there's a way to verify when somebody comes down that they were the ones that actually took the test for the health certificate card or for the food handler card. Sorry.
Jackie Rezitar, Director of Environmental Health. I just want to say that we are tightening that process. We're also working with PBS as well to help us solidify some safer measure to proctor the exam.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we will move on to health officer and staff reports and turn the time over to Dr. Iser.
Thank you. I believe there's a pretty good summary in my report about the efforts we've been making on the Ebola area. Over the last three weekends in particular, we've seen the number of queries drop fairly dramatically, going back to the weekend just prior to Veterans Day, then last weekend and the weekend before this last one. I generally talk to whoever's on call on Saturday and or Sunday just to make sure, and the numbers of inquiries have dropped way back. We still are getting some inquiries, such as we've had someone come visit us from New Guinea, which is, of course, around the world from where Guinea is. So we are still dealing with some geography issues, but that's not a problem for us. It doesn't take much time, and we can weed through those and go forward. I have been asked by the media and have responded affirmatively. Are we monitoring people from time to time who have come to Las Vegas, to the Valley, from the three countries in question? And the answer is yes. We don't have anyone who is a resident here who we have needed to monitor for the full 21 days or subset of that. But there are people coming here for conferences, for vacations from other jurisdictions. The system is working well from state to state and local jurisdiction to local jurisdiction, where we're asked to, we do monitor twice daily for temperature and other symptoms. So it's a risk-based system that CDC has come up with, high, medium, and low, and we will continue to do that monitoring. I don't know if there are other questions. There will be an update on the employee survey, a building update. There is no update on the legislative agenda. Nothing has changed significantly except for the turnover from Democrat to Republican for the Assembly. And the Senate, in terms of what our process is and what we'll be doing, I believe in about a week, it's time for me to get my little lobbying card in December for going up and working with the legislators over January, February, March, and so on. We have taken the time. We've met with Mr. Oscarson, Mr. Anderson, Dr. Hardy, I think is today or tomorrow, so we'll continue to meet with our local representatives. Mr. Oscarson asked, we had a discussion with him about Pahrump and the hospital and the fire service there, and I offered to reach out to them about helping to make sure that they feel comfortable about Ebola and the protocols that they may have in place. And we've already done that outreach and are waiting to hear back from both the fire chief and the hospital. I talked to both of them last week, and we'll be working with them as part of an extended part of our own community to make sure that that everyone feels comfortable and safe should someone walk into a hospital, even in Pahrump, and or call a dispatch center even in Pahrump for care there. I think it's very clear that anyone who is very likely to have been exposed to Ebola and has some symptoms will likely be transferred here. They may be transferred onward as CDC develops its central system of hospitals like the University of Nebraska, like Emory, like the NIH, but at least for the time being, we'll need to take care of them for several weeks. I also had a meeting with both the VA and Nellis Michael Callahan Hospital, and they are they've been working with us. They're happy to work with us. We will be going up and observing an exercise, which we've done for other hospitals in the valley. And we have found that should we need them, that they have plenty of PPE if we need them, but it's their PPE. We would have to borrow and give back. We also had a meeting with the coroner and several mortuaries over the last, I think it was just last week, so that everyone that we have been able to reach and who wants us to reach them, that we've had meetings with them about Ebola and how, for their particular segment, what do they need to feel more comfortable just in case. That was probably longer than I intended, but it lets you know that we have been busy over the last, actually 3 months now, working on Ebola. We are still in incident command system mode, but if things continue to go the way they are, we'll drop out of that and go back to routine kinds of efforts over the next 3 weeks probably. We might even stay in it through the year-end holidays, just to make sure that we don't drop anything.
Thanks. Susan?
In Africa, in the source areas, is the caseload still increasing, or has it leveled out?
I believe in Liberia, which was one of the hardest hit, it's starting to level out. But in, I think it's Sierra Leone, the caseload is still increasing. We do update the slide presentation, and it shows on one of the maps the three countries, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, with yellow dots that show the size of outbreaks in various villages. And we'll get that updated this week and have it up there. But that's what I've heard through the national media and through our own sources through CDC in the state.
Any other questions? Okay.
Then I'll ask Ms. Shirley to come up.
Good morning. I am Shirley Oakley. I'm the Human Resource Administrator, and much to my husband's dismay, my middle name is Ann. So it does all kind of go together. We've been looking at a number of various entities regarding an employee opinion survey. Boyd Gaming was very generous in sharing their information with us, had a discussion with their vendor who was very good and very complete, however, just not in our price range. Talked to some other public entities. We're close to narrowing down a vendor. I'm really leaning towards the Society for Human Resource Management. It's very detailed, however, it is also very affordable since this was not a budgeted item for us in this fiscal year. My target date is February 2nd. For rollout for our survey. It should take approximately 2 weeks. It'll probably take another 2 weeks after that to get the results. And after that, we'll have a plan for communicating those results with the employees and developing a system for action plans. I've used action plans in the past with surveys, whereas we identify certain items that we want to address in the current year, and then we start to put plans in place. And this will be in conjunction with the various either departments or employee groups within the organization. So hopefully by the January board meeting, we should have our plans solidified with, again, a rollout targeted for February 2nd. Okay. Any questions?
What's the ballpark range of costs that we're talking about?
Well, so far the price ranges I've had have been from $16,000 to just under $3,000. So I'm really leaning towards the $3,000 one.
Thank you.
All right. And next is Mr. Andy.
Andy Glass, Director of Administration for the district. I wanted to give an update on where we're at with our building purchase, and there have been three significant things that have been happening over the course of the past month. The first is that immediately following the last board meeting, I sent a letter to PGAL, our architectural firm, asking them to get together with Sansone Properties to review all of the documents, information that we have concerning a building, so that we were sure that all programming, all architectural drawings and conceptual relationships with departments, all mechanical and all information, or all engineering information, was brought together and laid out in front of Sansone. After reviewing that information, Sansone indicated that they had no interest in continuing with the project. They recognized that it was a little bit more than they had originally thought. The second thing is that we have been in discussion with Tiberti, the property owner that owns this property that we currently occupy and currently lease. And Tiberti has indicated that they will not enforce their lease extension premium that had originally been included in the lease. Now, we don't have that in writing yet, but they've indicated that verbally, and they have also indicated an interest in continuing discussion with us about the purchase of this building, so that we have begun that discussion. Thirdly, is that we are in final discussion with the owners of the property on Decatur. We have not reached final agreement on the purchase of that property. There are still some details that both of us are not comfortable with, and we expect to conclude that very quickly.
Any questions or comments? Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
Anything else?
I'm not sure legal counsel will allow me to do this, but this is our last meeting for 2 months. But are there any questions I can answer for any of you about that would relate to CHO comments?
I have one question.
That was priceless.
I do have one. Recently, we had at our board meeting an update from Metro and our business license regarding SPICE. Does the health district have any role in enforcement or anything along those lines that you're aware of?
I don't believe so. We don't have a hazardous materials team like many health districts do, whereas Metro does. And it's either the county or the city or both.
Right, for the licensing.
Districts.
I think what we're going to do, just in case you get any calls, is the product that they're using to make the spice was outlawed by the pharmacy board. So we will then, with all our renewals in January, at least in the county, include that what they cannot display ever. And if they do, they will then lose their business license. So we're going to do an update. So the other jurisdictions might want to take a look at it. We had a donut shop in my district allegedly selling spice, so I'm going to drive by it today and see. But we've been doing some, a donut shop and spice, you know. But,
I hear it cures the common cold.
It has not worked on me though. So I just was curious if you had any kind of a role on that part of it. So thank you.
No, but whatever Metro or the county or the cities would like us to do, we would certainly look at what is within our legal authority to do and would be very helpful as best we can.
Thank you.
I did mention maybe last month that we had a meeting with the vector control entities ranging from Mesquite to Boulder City. I might ask that Commissioner G, that we be able to talk to your folks. They didn't come to our meeting, and we would like them to. We're trying to look at an overall way that with the county and with us in particular, and then what resources the cities can bear, that we look at protecting the whole valley now that Chikungunya virus is coming in. We still have West Nile virus and other kinds of vectors that we need to worry about. So if you don't mind, I'll contact you.
Mayor Beth and I could talk to them and see. I think Jason was out last week. Is probably where.
This was about 2 weeks ago, and so we'd be happy to contact you and work through you and Don to see if we can further that meeting. We're right now in a quiescent period of time with little, maybe not negligible, but little mosquito activity, but that'll come back once the rain starts again. And I might add that when I did this figuring before, what it costs us up in Washoe County was by
preventing one or two, probably two neuroinvasive cases of West Nile virus can be prevented by a full-fledged vector control district area that can work collaboratively with each other. It doesn't save us money. It doesn't save necessarily the county or the cities any money, but it saves the healthcare system lots of money if we can put together a full-fledged vector control program.
All right. Thank you very much. Bill.
Just one question for Dr. Iser. Given that we don't have a meeting until into January, is there anything regarding the building acquisition that we would have to, you know, give approval to during that period of time that could hang you up if we're not available to at least give you those approvals?
You see my Cheshire grin. Yes. And we would need perhaps, if we do a significant change, to pull you together on a one-item basis in December. And we would, of course, give the proper notice. But we might ask you to participate either by phone or in person or both, like we are doing today with, I believe, Mr. Collins is on the line, in order to move forward in one way or another. Thank you for the question. We do have a finance committee meeting, thanks for the reminder, in which we'll go over the audit results on December 15th, Jackie reminds me, and Ms. Bradley reminds me.
All right. Thank you very much. You have the informational items, number 8, in front of you, and so we'll move to our final public comment. Is there anyone wishing to give public comment? All right, well, since we don't have a meeting in December, I wish everybody a happy and safe holidays, and thank you for coming out today and participating. Meeting adjourned.